I'm Jonathan Santiago, and for the guests joining me today, the awards and the accolades, they're numerous. She's a four-time Olympic gold medalist, three-time WNBA MVP, two-time WNBA champion. Those are just a few of them. But Lisa Leslie is truly a pioneer for women in the sport of basketball, and I'm excited to be speaking with her today. Lisa, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
So first off, I got to ask you, how are your brackets looking?
My brackets are not looking so good.
That's what I figured.
On the men's side, of course. But I think overall it's just been a great March Madness. The tournament has been excellent. I'm looking forward to both of the Final Fours coming up.
So who did you have in your original Final Four, I guess, for the men's side? Because that's where things are really, really out of whack.
Well, honestly, I really thought this year that all the number ones would make it to the Final Four. There was just a strong pool, I thought, for all of the number one seeds on the men's side. And on the women's side, I thought that there would be maybe one team that could probably not make it in regards to the number ones. But for Stanford and UConn, I had them chosen. I did not think Baylor would get upset by Texas A&M. So I'm sure that probably only the Texas A&M fans' bracket still looks probably the way that they expected. And then Notre Dame was also a surprise. I mean, I had no idea. Taylor Diggins, I mean, very good. But Muffet McGraw has been playing great basketball right now. And this is the time of year you want to be playing at your best.
Are you looking forward to this VCU-Butler matchup? I mean, this is the first time that you have two mid-major schools on the med side meeting in the Final Four. This is pretty historic.
It is very historic, and it's exciting. I'm always rooting for the underdog. I just think it's great. It's just unfortunate that the two of them are meeting on the same side of the bracket. I mean, imagine if those two could meet in the finals, it would really be, you know, an even bigger story. But I think that Butler may have an edge, but VCU, I mean, they have been phenomenal. I love their coach and just the energy. They look very, like, they understand exactly what it is that they want to do. They attack the basket strong. They play so hard. And really, that's at the end of the day what you can ask for your players is to give it 100%. So that's going to be an awesome game. It may hopefully it's not even better than the final game, because sometimes you get that, you know, where you're, you know, the game before the finals actually it was a better game. But I think those guys are very deserving of being there, and they played great basketball. Very exciting.
So, I mean, obviously, a lot of people expect Stanford, UConn, and the women's final. If that is the case, who you got?
I'm going with Stanford. I've been riding with Stanford pretty much all season. I chose them before the season began because I just thought that with their experience last year and losing to UConn last year, having the opportunity to beat UConn on their own floor, and they kind of saw some things that they could do. The Ogumike sisters have been phenomenal. Their ability to play defense and guard Maya Moore. But again, Maya didn't shoot well. She's a great player, and she'll find a way to win. So it's going to be a tough matchup, but I'm going to have to stick with my pick, and that's Stanford.
All right, let's veer off, I guess, and talk about a little bit of your past professional career. I mean, this past NBA All-Star weekend, excuse me, you were recognized at the annual Legends Brunch with the Leadership Award, I believe it was. And that's got to be pretty cool to be honored with a lot of the other LA greats like Jerry West, James Worthy, and Magic, and be recognized for your contributions to the game of basketball.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Being a part of the Lakers/Sparks family has been a dream come true growing up here in LA, having a chance to watch the Lakers, and then giving thanks to Byron Scott, who came back to his alma mater, which is mine, Morningside High School, and having our team allowing us to come to Laker practices, to go to a Laker game. Really, that fueled my fire. I've just have become a Laker fan ever since that time, and have followed the Showtime group and on, and then Magic allowing me to play pickup with him when I was training before the WNBA began, getting ready for the Olympics, and then having Michael Cooper as my coach. So it's sort of been woven into my life to be a part of the Lakers in so many different ways that to be honored, you know, as one of the legends of the game was great. And obviously to be on stage with Magic and Jerry West, like you said, and James Worthy, who's, you know, one of my favorite players, they called him Big Game James. Whenever the Lakers needed the basket, they were going to give him the ball. So that's really who I sort of took after. I wanted to be the go-to player on my team after meeting and watching James Worthy. So they've truly inspired me for so many years.
Now, looking back on your professional career, obviously being tabbed as one of the faces not only of the Los Angeles Sparks franchise, but of the WNBA itself when it started, did you feel pressure knowing that you were being looked at as a leader for this new league when it started?
I didn't feel any pressure because I didn't really understand the magnitude of the platform we had. I thought it was just going to be sort of a summer league and we travel, you know, and play like reversible jerseys. I had no idea we would be sort of the sister team to the NBA and really have access to all of the first class facilities that the men play in. So it took a few years to really get sort of a feel for what the WNBA was, what our place was going to be here, and the fact that, you know, our slogan, "We Got Next," you know, became so national, and that, you know, we had commercials and endorsements, and it really was sort of a new experience for us. And so it didn't really dawn on us what we were representing until a little bit later, a few years later. But I really loved being a role model for so many young girls and boys, and that's why I'm also teamed up with Capital One right now. And I don't know if you know, but the Capital One Cup rewards the NCAA athletes program at its highest level, you know, Division I, for their cumulative on-field performance across multiple men and women's sports. And when you talk about just being a student athlete, you know, to me, I love being a part and having these different types of opportunity to really spread a positive message. And that's what the Capital One Cup is doing, is really representing excellence and teamwork and commitment and integrity, and they're rewarding these student athletes for that type of commitment.
Very cool, very cool. And we'll ask you a little bit. I'll ask you a little bit more about that as we close up the interview. But I also want to get your thoughts on the future of the WNBA as well. I mean, we all know that United States, America has been struggling with its economy, and it's hurt a lot of businesses in recent years. And the WNBA is one business that has not been immune to it as well. I mean, you have the Shaq, who played in Detroit, won a championship there. They moved to Tulsa. The league's most decorated franchise, the Houston Comets, they folded. And even up here, I mean, I'm here in Sacramento, another one of the WNBA's most successful teams. The Monarchs closed up shop recently. I mean, where do you think the league is going to be moving forward?
I think the league will be here. It's just a matter of transformations. And like you said, with the economy, there's just adjustments that we've all made on a personal level. I'm sure we've adjusted our personal finances and what you do and how you spend money, and the same thing for the league. But I think overall, the actual product has been phenomenal, the growth of the women's game. We have more young girls playing basketball than ever before in our country, and the acceptance of women's sports. So there's a true positive upside to what's happening in the WNBA, and I think we're just sort of changing the formula and maybe moving some of these teams to smaller arenas and more basketball-oriented cities, and it's been great. I think that the WNBA is truly showing its staying power, and a lot of that we really have to thank David Stern for, because his foresight and seeing that there are women's sports are here, they deserve to be here, and he's really found a place for each and every one of us, and we're really thankful for that opportunity. And we're also thankful for our fans. We have a ton of fans, 2 million fans that watch our sport, you know, every summer, and we really appreciate them because, you know, women support women, and we really appreciate their support, and then it's very family-oriented. We are always doing things within our communities and giving back, and we love that opportunity to be role models. So it's all good. It's just, you know, it's just a different change, and that's just what each individual has experienced in their lives as well.
Now, as a lifelong resident of Southern California, you were born and raised there. You play basically every level of basketball down there. I have to ask you about this whole, you know, being up here in Sacramento, this whole possibility of the Kings relocating and moving down there to what would be to Anaheim. I mean, do you right. think that would work?
I think that there's so many people here in the basically Southern California area, that we have enough space and enough people to accommodate. I do think from a financial perspective, maybe for the Lakers and the Kings, meaning our hockey team, it may be more of a conflict of interest for them. But in Anaheim, I mean, Anaheim is its own sort of country. I mean, there are enough people that could truly support the new Kings coming. Maybe they're going to change the names. I think it can work. Is it something that I would promote? No, I think it's really tough for the Clippers being in the same building as the Lakers. It's tough for them being here. But then you get a Blake Griffin and all that's changed, right? So, you know, with a few tweaks, obviously, getting some good franchise players maybe to come and winning. Winning is really important. And L.A. is a city about winning. And when you're winning, you have fans.
Do you think the Kings could ever emerge from behind the Clippers and Lakers' shadow down there in Orange County? Because obviously, if they move down there, they're the third team behind those two.
Well, they start out that way, but you just never know based on how they compete, how many wins they get. The one good draw is that now you have in Anaheim, every team in the NBA will be coming to Anaheim, which is also a great draw, whether you're playing the Lakers or the Clippers or you're playing, you know, Boston or the Miami Heat. And that's another good thing where you know, all those great players get a chance to come through there, and now you're impacting the lives in that community.
Now, at the same time, I mean, I think, what was it, maybe a month ago or so, there was an article written in GQ kind of being critical of Laker fans and Southern California basketball fans in general. But do you think that fans in Southern California, particularly Orange County, can ever match that same passion that was exhibited or that has been exhibited by fans up here in Sacramento, especially during the team's heyday in the early 2000s?
Well, I don't think it's really about trying to match what the Sacramento Kings, what that type of crowd was, because we're not sure why they're leaving there. Obviously, there's some financial reasons why they have to make this move. So, no, I think Sacramento's fans were great. I love the cowbells and the energy that those people had there, and you guys created such a culture that it will be hard to sort of mimic. But, you know, with that said, I can totally understand the, you know, the California LA fan is not necessarily your rah-rah fan, but, you know, the Clippers have that. So it really depends on what type of identity the team sort of creates. How focused are they on the fans, and how much are they giving to them to really make the fans want to give back? You know, you can sort of create that culture based on the way you play, how hard you play. And the Clippers have been able to do that. I mean, I had a phenomenal time at the Clipper game. I mean, it's just a different crowd. No one's really dressed in suits like at the Laker game. It was very, you know, laid back, but the crowd was totally into the game. And those are the same LA fans that are, you know, sit elbow to elbow with the Laker fans. So I totally think and have confidence in the fans in Anaheim, and there's a possibility. I don't think that they want to actually, you know, bring in the cowbells and be those Sacramento fans, but you never know. Maybe you guys have to keep driving down or flying down and, you know, making that impression and creating that sort of culture.
It's a pretty long drive down there, especially if the
It is a long drive. You might want to just hop on a flight, though, Southwest.
Yeah, we can't deal with the traffic that you guys deal with down there.
I hear you.
But,
well, it's unfortunate. I mean, you guys have to look at yourself. Did you guys fight hard enough to try to keep your team there?
That's true. I mean, there are a lot of politics.
I mean, what did you guys do? Did you petition? Did you get out? Did you tell the Maloof brothers, we want our team? What can we do? How can we help?
There is a lot of politics that is involved in this whole process up here. Being up here, I'm familiar with the process, and you know, people ask me from time to time, who you put blame on? You want to put the blame on the Maloofs? Do you want to put the blame on city government? Do you want to put blame on the fans? And I think you kind of have to put blame on, I guess, equally on all three parties to a certain extent, but I guess.
Well, how about this? Maybe you have to ask a better question. Maybe it's not about where do you place the blame. It's like, what can we do to fix this or change it?
That could be true, too. I mean, maybe if we have more businesses up here in Sacramento, it would be a...
There's a method to it. It has to do with money. You got to just figure out how can you fix this problem? What needs to happen in order for them to stay?
Yeah. It is, that is,
instead of asking who should be blamed.
That is true.
But you know, that's just my opinion.
Oh yeah, and we love it. That's why we're having you on today. But you mentioned, before I let you go here, you talked about it briefly. You talked about the Capital One Cup. I mean, I've heard that you are on the advisory board for Capital One. What exactly does that role entail?
Well, it entails us, we usually have meetings or we tweet about it. We follow the different colleges just to make sure that people are aware. This is all about bragging rights, like who has the best school and, you know, are you allowed to take home at the end of the day the Capital One Cup? And that's really what you want to do. I mean, for us, I watch USC and I'm like, dang. You know, we're behind, we're losing, we need baseball to win, you know. It's just about really rallying behind your school as a fan and as a student athlete. The other thing is this is really just beyond just the cup. It's because after the spring season, the inaugural winners of the men and women's athletics program will be announced, and then each school will receive the Capital One Cup trophy and a $200,000 scholarship to fund postgraduate educational opportunities for student athletes. And I think that's cool because now you're talking about having funds that will help for postgraduate. And I went and got my master's and I didn't have any help. So it would be great, you know, for those schools that win, that can help reward those student athletes to further their education.
All right, fantastic. Lisa Leslie, thank you for joining me today.
You are so welcome, and I just want to tell the fans they can learn more about the Capital One Cup on Facebook at facebook.com/Capital One Cup or on twitter.com @Capital One Cup. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Lisa Leslie.
All right, appreciate it. That was Lisa Leslie, one of the all-time greats in the game of basketball.